Hello, welcome back to the Youth Peace Talks. I'm Leila.
And I'm Clara.
And we present to you the second season of our podcast. In this season, we're going to focus on the role of language in peace building. Language is a very rich topic, both in conflict and in peace building, which is why we're dedicating a whole season to it, because I think there's a lot to say about it, both in terms of its challenges and the ways that it promotes conflict in certain contexts, but also in the way that it can connect people and it can allow for further discussion and allow peace building to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And for this very first episode, we are going to give the floor away to our colleague Yup, who is the program coordinator of the Young Leadership Experience. And he's going to have a conversation with two alumni of the program, and they're going to reflect on the topic and share their thoughts. And I'm super excited to hear this. What about you, Leila?
I'm also really excited. I think they have some great insights to give.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to another episode. My name is Yup Kies, and I'm one of YPI's program coordinators. I will be taking it over from Clara and Leila today, and we will have a conversation about language in peace building. In this podcast, we will specifically focus on YPI's flagship program called the Young Leadership Experience.
The Young Leadership Experience is a program that aims to empower young Israelis and Palestinians to develop their leadership skills and actively participate in peace processes and reconciliation. The three pillars of the program include capacity building, knowledge development, and dialogue. It is a year-long training program in the region, which also includes a week-long conference in the Netherlands. I am joined by two former participants with whom I had the honor to work with as a program coordinator, Lyra and Leila. Welcome to this podcast. Would you be so kind to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Lyra. Today I'm in New York. I work here in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but I am the alumni of the project. I think it was 2 years ago that we did the project, and it really shaped a lot of my work today. And it just was a beautiful experience that I am still learning about it, and I like to reflect. So I'm very happy to be here today.
Hi, everyone. My name is Leila, and I am currently in Jerusalem. I currently work as an auditor for PwC, but I also was an alumni for the project of Youth Peace Initiative about 2 years ago. And it was just a very interesting and intricate experience to have, because we learned so much about each other, so much about things that we didn't know, specifically the conflict, and how we can actually make the world a bit better in simple ways that just help others see what we see and understand what we understood.
Thank you so much, guys, for joining us today. So, as we will be talking about the topic of language, I wanted to start off by asking a little bit about your language skills. So, could you tell me and your listeners what languages you speak, and perhaps what language you would like to learn?
I think, Leila, you go first.
Okay. So I am a Native American speaker. I'm a Native English speaker, and I speak also Arabic and I speak Hebrew. If I would want to learn a language, I think it'll be Italian, not because of the conflict, just because it's a very interesting and romantic, I think, language.
Oh, yeah. So I was born in Brazil. So actually, my mother tongue would be Portuguese, but I moved to Israel when I was 5 years old. So I think I'm more fluent in Hebrew, but I speak about six languages. So language is something that is very interesting for me and something that I really like to play with and learn. And there's so many languages I would like to learn. I think in no particular order would be Arabic, and German and Italian as well.
Thank you both for sharing. It's actually quite a funny thing that you both want to learn Italian. I think also without a doubt, I can say that I'm surrounded by two polyglots. I myself speak Dutch and English, and I know some Hebrew and German as well. But if I were to choose a new language, I would go for Japanese. I actually think it's a very cool language and I'm up for the challenge.
Cool. So yeah, speaking about language and peace building, of course, we've had the chance to got to know each other about 2 years ago. We've been in a program together, which was for multiple months. We shared conversations, we've been into dialogue, and we've been talking a lot. So obviously we used language in our efforts to enhance the role of youth in peace building processes. But from a more abstract level, I wondered, what does language mean to you?
So I feel that to me, language is a tool. There's very different ways of languages. For example, there's body language and there's also like actual talking language. But I think it's a tool, and I think it's a tool that if you want, you're able to like learn how to do it better and use it. And I think for me, language is something that was always interesting for me. And if it's like performing art or speaking in front of public speaking and things like that. So for me, language is a tool. It can be used negatively, but it can also be used in a good way, in a meaningful way. So this is language for me.
I think for me, I think language is a way to other people more than anything else, especially in very sensitive or non-sensitive situations, because I learned Hebrew about 6 years ago. And the moment you start speaking a language of the people or the person who is opposite you, they feel an instant closeness to you. And that's always very interesting to see, because people start to feel comfortable and they're more open and willing to participate in the discussion. Whereas I think when you lack that tool, like you said, it's more distant, I guess.
I agree with Laila, because I feel there is this meetup kind of events that it's like a language exchange. Mm-hmm. And I feel that every time somebody makes an effort to learn your language, you feel just honored that somebody is willing to try that and to try to understand your culture. I mean, language is culture as well, right? Yeah. So I completely agree with Laila. Like it's a way to connect and it's a way to better understand, definitely.
That's really interesting indeed. So moving on to the role of language, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is also partly influenced by the use of different languages in the region, and in this instance, Hebrew and Arabic. What are your thoughts on this, and how did it influence your experience in the young leadership experience?
I think there's something interesting about when we say the language in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because we actually did most of the conversing that we did in English, which is the interesting point that distanced us from the entire conflict and the emotional baggage that comes with the conflict. So I think there's a question that arises, that what is the role of a third or a neutral language in this conflict? And I think for me specifically, it helped create some distance from that emotions that sometimes fogged how people saw reality or how people experienced conflicts, because they're so intricate. So going about using English, I think it helped us gain a perspective of the other side that we did not have beforehand. And I don't think we actually practiced either language, either Arabic or Hebrew, during that period. I think it was mostly English.
Yeah, it's true. I think from the group, I would say Laila and I speak very good English from our group. So I think we're both very comfortable speaking English, and it wasn't the same for other people in the group. We had people that English was not very, you know, like well spoken, but it was fine, because I think that we managed to, just like Laila said, to first of all, we had each other, like the Palestinians had other Palestinians participant be there and support their and like translate. And also in the Israeli group, Because sometimes when you're emotional, you want to say what you want to say in your own language because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But we had our other friends helping us translate it. So that was interesting. But I think also, I don't know, it was just, I remember this one beautiful moment when we had one of the participants, his English was not good. And he said, I just want you to know that the fact that my English is not good doesn't mean that I'm not smart enough or I don't understand enough, because I understand it's just hard for me to explain what I want to say. And when he said that, it was beautiful because this is how, like, this is a part of the conflict. We're in the same region and many of us don't speak the other person's language. Like, I don't speak Arabic. I don't understand Arabic. And some of the participants, the Palestinians, don't know Hebrew. And I think it contributes to the misunderstanding and to the tension between the Palestinians and Israelis. So I think it plays a big part. But I think it's also, it was kind of beautiful that we managed to find like a kind of a common ground talking in English and expressing yourself in English.
Yeah, thank you, Lyra. You indeed remind me of that moment. I think we were setting up the safe space principles in the beginning of the conference. And then, I think indeed it was one of the safe space principles or one of the things that we wanted to have the group to know is that language or English proficiency does not reflect one's intelligence or one's knowledge of the conflict. And I think that was very strong. And I also remember that we had one rule that we as program coordinators wanted to put in there was Bora Bora. For example, if the participants would then withdraw or would within the group would speak their own language, but someone wouldn't understand, this could either be Dutch or English or Arabic or Hebrew, then if someone would like to partake in that conversation, you would have to say Bora Bora and to take them out of the them using their own language and having a language that everyone understands. True. So yeah, you already addressed it a little bit, but why do you then think language is so important in peace work?
Well, I think I said it before, I think that language is not only spoken language, but it's also body language. And I think that, first of all, a lot of the peace building work is working it out, you know, talking about it. We can understand each other's experience, or we don't necessarily need to understand each other's experience, but the ability to hear or the ability to share your experience in peace building, I think it's very important. And like you said, language is a tool. So language will be a way to share and to understand someone's perspective. And I think it's a start for peace building. If you want to make peace with someone, you need to have at least like an understanding or a respect or a mutual common ground to start the process.
I think I completely agree. And from our experience in the conference, I think the role of the spoken language and the body language played a role, because whenever we felt that we were overwhelmed or tired or feeling very uncomfortable in the space that we were sharing, I think part of that was that we took a break, we regrouped, and then we went back. So I think the coordinators understanding the fact that we needed this time through our body language, or us understanding each other through the body language that was done, it truly helped us like advance the ideas that we have and promoted and the conversations that we have, because unless we had that small breaks that we did, I think some of the conversation could not have gone as far as they went. So both the spoken word, which is actually communicating and listening, and the body language that played a very crucial role in the entire conference or the entire conflict resolution that we were in.
Yeah,
Would you indeed also say that those moments of breaks that you had in between those sessions, and being able maybe to speak to your within in your own language to your group, would it also be something to blow off some steam, or say something before you could actually enter a new dialogue session?
Definitely. I think the groups, the having the ability, first of all, to be multilingual is something very crucial. And second of all, having the ability to talk in your mother tongue with the group that does understand what you're talking about just gives you some sort of security and safety that you feel that you're okay, that whatever has happened, you can talk through it in whatever language you choose. And then you can go back and talk in the sessions that we had. So yeah, I think it just gave some sort of familiarity and home feeling, which is something that we needed, I guess, before being abroad.
Yeah, I agree. Like being able to speak our own languages in our own groups was sometimes you're feeling something and you need to first understand what you're feeling, to put it into words, to translate it, to communicate in the right way what you want to communicate. So I think those breaks, or if it's like a coffee break, or we called it a breather, then, or just like sitting in our own groups was very helpful. But I also think that, I don't know even how to say it, but like, there's something like when you, I think it was one of the rules that we said, like, don't react. There was something else, like, don't, like sometimes, because it's the conflict and because many times things were said that made us like emotional or, so we had like another rule for the safe space of like, don't react, first listen, and then I don't know, you help me out. There was something else there. So I really remember like it was something that you needed to practice. You needed to practice listening. You needed to practice understanding and processing. And then you needed to practice putting into words that will not be offensive or will not be trigger. So I also think that even though we spoke most of the time in English, we still used words in Hebrew and Arabic that mean different. Like I remember like one time we talked about intifada, and for the Israelis, intifada meant something terrible. And for the Palestinian group, when they spoke about the intifada in like historical narrative way, for them, it meant something completely different. And I just remember this session just blew up and the Netherlands group was just like, what's going on? And we're like, no, but you need to understand. And I think this was like one of the moments that you realize that language plays a part, because language means culture and it means meaning. And like every group of us had like different meaning for different words and different association with different words. And I think that was like interesting to see where we understood each other and also where we clashed. And I think this was like a very interesting part where language was a part of the conflict, you know?
I completely agree. I remember also like terminology played such a big role in the conference and the sessions that we had, because one time we actually fought regarding the terminology of whether it's settlements or whether it's another term that is supposed to be used. So language also plays a role in shaping the terminology that we use, because like you said, in the terminology affects how the other side perceives it. So you have to use a term that is not offensive or is correct or is right for the sake. So yeah, I remember that time that it blew up.
Yeah, I also remember that. Indeed, with those are two very... two examples that really called to my imagination the conversation that we had about intifada and the conversation that we had about settlements and how that is viewed differently by different communities. And then also having to do that in English, you get the typical lost in translation. I think we were there also. Maybe we can dive into one of these experiences. Lyra, you indeed mentioned the conversation that we had about intifada.
what were the different uses in the different languages?
So I don't want to say what it's for the Palestinian Intifada, because I think it's more appropriate that Laila should explain it. But in that particular moment, we were talking about narrative and historical. Every group had their own narrative and how history affected. And I think we were presenting our historical timeline or something like that. And the Palestinians were talking about the second Intifada. And I remember that the Israeli reaction was like, wait a minute. You are having a different experience of the second Intifada that we were having. And for the Israelis, the second Intifada, it was around 2000, the year 2000. And I was a kid, I was in school or something. And for us, it was a time of violence, a time of a lot of violence and bombing and terror attacks and all the horrible things and memories. Just like for the Israeli participant, it just flooded us. And it was very emotional. And I think that the Palestinians, I think that they were even surprised for this kind of reaction. I think that because it was a safe space, I think all of us, nobody was trying to hurt anybody else. We were always having a very honest, open conversation. And I think that sometimes you trigger someone without even knowing, you know? And I think that for the Israeli group, the Second Intifada is a major trigger. And it's connected to PTSD and terror and fear. And for the Palestinians, it was a different experience. And it takes me back to something else that also comes to language. If I am in a bus or just somewhere and I hear people speaking Arabic and they're acting weird or something because I don't understand the language, I feel uncomfortable and I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, are they planning something? And I remember one of the Palestinians saying that they felt the same, like when they saw a soldier talking to them in Hebrew, they were like, does he think like I have a weapon or like I'm scared? Like, is he trying to arrest me? And I was like, no, maybe he was just talking on the phone with his mom making Shabbat dinner. Like, and sometimes it's the not knowing each other's language is contributing to the tension because we don't understand and because we have our own emotions and history and it's so much stressful and so traumatic for both sides that it plays into the fears that are now the daily fears. And we basically kind of live together, you know, we always I don't want to say coexist, but we're side to side, we're neighbors. And we still interact with someone that we don't understand. And it gets messy, you know, it gets scary. So for me, it just comes together with the wording, with the understanding, and just makes everything more complicated, if it makes sense.
I honestly don't remember this incident that well, but I do remember the discussion that we have regarding the terminology of the Intifada or not, because Intifada in the Arabic community, it refers to the community standing up for itself, for whatever it was going through during the time before. And it was just an uproar of the community trying to gain some of its desires, let's say. So I think the change or the difference between how it is perceived on both sides is, like you said, Laila, it's related to culture, related to the discourse that people talk, the narrative that they have. So I think that this was such a meaningful moment for us to understand, okay, so the other side doesn't think like we think, or they don't understand why we're behaving in such a way. And I think I totally agree with you, because when you first learn Hebrew, you gain a perspective that you did not have before then. This program just emphasized that, because you think everybody's they're trying to think, yeah, we have a weapon, we're going to kill you, and that's it, you're going down. And then it's when you hear them, you're they're talking on the phone with a friend and they're making, I don't know, they're talking about college and classes or whatever it is. So I think once you learn the language, it's so much easier to communicate with each other because, like you said, we interact mostly on a daily basis. I work at an Israeli branch. You worked with many volunteers who are Arabic. You had colleagues, you had fellow students who talk Arabic and Hebrew and whatever it is. So I think understanding language is such a crucial idea or crucial tool that people will have in order to actually advance the conflict resolution we're trying to achieve, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think those moments were moments where we understood each other better without understanding each other. You know what I mean? It's just like, I remember somebody said, I came here to unlearn the things that I learned about the other side, you know? And I think at those moments is when we learned that we really, like, we, for the most part, we want to understand each other. But the thing is, the reality for now doesn't really let us understand each other. And by going to the peace building program, we managed to understand some of each other. And I think when we came back from the Netherlands, I was a student union representative, and I had students that were mostly speaking Arabic, and some of them never went to a Hebrew speaking school. So many of them didn't really feel comfortable talking to the teacher because their Hebrew was not very good in the class. And I just remember that after I understood that people don't feel comfortable if they don't know the language so good. So I actually made an effort and talked with some of the Arab speaking students that we had, and they were like, yeah, thank you for approaching me because I really wanted to speak with the professor, but I really felt uncomfortable. And because I met you guys, because most of you were also students in the Hebrew University, I was like, wait a minute, like I can do something, you know, I can do something in my day to day. And I also remember, like, Laila, you were working in the Shivyon, it's like a department, right? You were working in the department.
Equality. Yeah.
Yeah. The equality department. And I was like, so I think I also talked with another participant that like sometimes we just need to approach each other and just start speaking. And if we don't know the same language, it can be a little bit embarrassing, but the fact that we even try to do that, it's already like a big step. And it's just like, I took it home, and it was just like amazing feeling after that.
I also remember sometime during the program that it was also funny that you guys, being Israeli-Palestinian, sometimes connected on a language base much better than us coming from the Netherlands or Europe. You have your own language in many ways, and this language is also very much interconnected to each other, and that we sometimes couldn't understand also culturally, right? Couldn't understand a word you were saying, but you guys completely got each other. I think that was something that really is important to mention as well. There's a lot of like between the two languages and the way you talk and dialogue and speak and come up for yourself.
And the other thing that I would like to mention personally, that I think the state of Israel, I mean, I'm speaking as a private person, but like, I think we should learn Arabic. I mean, Israel is the only state that speaks Hebrew in the region. And I think we need to speak and learn Arabic because it's our neighbors, you know, it's our neighbors, and it's just gonna make life easier. And we have so much tension and conflict. It's just something that I think it's something that is very important, is to know each other's language. But I also think that Arab speaking schools and Palestinians should also learn Hebrew, and it's going to facilitate us to talk to each other in university, in workplaces. It's just going to help a lot of our reality, our day to day. It's just going to be a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, for sure. I think it will create a mutual understanding, a language of peace.
I think that there is a very important component that goes with that, because the language will never be a tool that will be useful in conflict resolution unless we also teach open-mindedness, because the fact that we understand each other's language is useless. And you can, I don't know how you experience that, but I have experienced it, because I speak Hebrew and I have met people from many backgrounds. Some were very open to the idea of interacting with the other side, some were less. So I think there is always a crucial component, a psychological component, which is to actually teach openness and acceptance of others. That needs to be taught. Maybe I totally agree that it needs to be taught at the school level rather than the university level, because I don't know how you experience Arabic speaking students, but for me, first 2 years didn't speak to anybody. Third, fourth year, I was more confident and more acceptant of speaking to other students, especially Israeli students, that made me feel that it was okay to talk to them, and they're not all like the armies that we see at checkpoints who just have a certain perspective of us.
Thank you, Laila. Indeed, that's a experience that I can imagine. Okay, maybe to round it up a little bit, I have a final question for you guys. Would you think language is more of a bridge or a connector? Or do you think language is a barrier in peace building, or even actually a cause of conflict?
I think it's not this or that. I mean, it can be many things. And I agree with Laila. Sometimes we might even speak the same language and still not agree. So I think, like, I will go to my previous language is a tool. It can be used for a good thing. It can be a bridge. It can connect people. It can open us to better understand each other. But also, I think there needs to be a lot of work to open your mind and accept that sometimes, you know, a lot of people told me, oh, you're going to this program with Palestinians, like, they're going to change your, like, people were scared that I will change and I will, like, lose who I am and my own narrative and my own understanding of my reality. And it didn't. It just opened me up to understanding someone else's reality and experiences. And for me, it was something that made me rich to listen to someone else's experience and be able to be understanding of someone else's experience, but not everybody can do that. And I think language is something that we can use, but it can also, you know, there's hate speeches, there's the cancel culture, you know, there's so many things. So I think it can be both at the same time and neither at the same time. You know, it's what you do with it that matters.
I completely agree. I think exactly that is what language is. If we consider it merely as a tool, then it can be a tool in regard, depending on the intentions of the person who is using it. But I also think that having the third language, which was English in our situation, actually helped the entire conversation that was being held. Because if we had had this conversation in Hebrew and Arabic, I think the tensions would have been increased so much, because that's how it is. Language is culture, and culture has emotions and feelings and people and history and so much heritage that comes with the language itself. So I think in this time, in our situation specifically, language was a tool that bridged between two parties, whereas sometimes it can be exactly like you said, there are hate speeches, cancel culture, whatever it is, that just does the exact opposite of what we want. So it depends on what the situation is and who is using it and how they are using it.
Yeah, 100%. That brings me back to, like, language can be like spoken language, but also there's a lot of like body language. And I think that in person, meeting in person is really very, very important, because there's so much body language. Like sometimes we say something and then our body, like you can read the body language that whatever I'm saying is not true, you know? So I think that a lot of peace building, first of all, I think as well, like Laila, English should be like a common ground, because then nobody feels more comfortable than the other one. Like we both don't completely feel good with speaking in English for this very emotional situation. So it makes us kind of like in the same level, I would say. But also I think this is something that our program talked a lot about, that we have to meet in person, and we have to meet in person in a place that feels like a safe space. And I think that for many of those times, only in the Netherlands, we really felt like in a safe space, because in the region with the conflict, some side always felt not completely comfortable. And this is maybe something worth talking about maybe some other time, about actual physical place for peace building.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. It's again, or it's indeed something that we keep working on. And, you know, you try to facilitate a safe space in which everyone feels comfortable, but it's also kind of inevitable that people do not feel comfortable. And sometimes that leads to very open and honest conversations. As long as you uphold the principles that you agreed upon, it's safe enough to share them. But yeah, sometimes you are just an hour away from home, and after the meeting, you're back in your neighborhood, and you're not completely taken out of this space that you feel comfortable or uncomfortable in. Yeah, I think it's very wise words from you guys. Is there maybe something that you would want to give away to peace builders or young leaders, or some words of advice to keep in the language connection? Would you have some words of advice when it comes to peace builders based on your experiences?
I think I would say for everybody who is listening, that just listen to what the other person is saying and try to process before you actually react, which is something that was a baseline for all of us. But it is a practiced skill that needs to be practiced over and over, because listening and hearing are very different things. And when you listen to the other person, you try to understand what they're trying to say. We had an exercise once that was listen beyond the content of what the person is trying. Try to understand what the intentions, what the motivation, what the thoughts are behind the actual words that are being spoken.
I think it's indeed the ability to listen, something we really try to focus on. Mm-hmm. And it will get you so much further, especially when you're working in a dialogue setting where you want people to open up and to create understanding. Listening and speaking are very important, and it sounds simpler than it is, but it's a skill you need to acquire. Mm-hmm. Laila, do you also have something to give away to our listeners?
Well, I think just make the first step. And there's so many programs that are trying to do good, and I feel that sometimes you just need to make the first step, you know, and don't be afraid. When people talk about language, I see this a lot of like immigrants, they're like scared to speak the language because they know that the language is not 100%. And let me tell you, I speak a bunch of languages, none of them I speak 100%, and that's fine. As long as you're trying to make the effort, as long as you are learning, if somebody judges you, they're the ones that are not fine, you know. Always try to be the one that keeps pushing through to learn the language and speak the language. And people will, I think, will respect you for trying and will also want to help you. So just do the first step and don't be scared or shy, or just do it, you know.
Just do it. Very nice. Yeah, I think you guys are really, you really did a great job in explaining how you are utilizing language in peace building efforts, and also how you are sometimes scared by language or how you are limited by language. But in the end, it's about finding a common ground and listening to each other, speaking to each other, and making those first steps. Thank you very much for being here. It was so nice to see you guys again. We don't do this often, and indeed, I completely back the in-person meeting. So whenever it's possible again, we will meet in person. But for now, especially in these corona pandemic times, it's good that we also can rely on electronic devices to speak to each other and to create a safe space where we can hold these conversations. Thank you so much, Lyra and Laila.
Thank you for having us.
Grazie mille, arigato, toda, and shukran. Thank you for listening.